It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome back. It's Jill on Money. It's hour number two, and we've got a very interesting guest for this hour. Her name is Sandy Jolly, and you got it. The title is amazing. She is a reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert. And I'm really interested in this because we get so many questions about reverse mortgages. So why not have an expert and someone who's advocating on behalf of consumers? So Sandy Jolly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jill, for having me today.
And we have to thank our mutual friend Janet for connecting us. We love our Janet. So Sandy, tell me, how does one become a reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert?
Honestly, it was an accident. My parents were taken advantage of by a reverse mortgage lender at a time when my dad was in the last month of his life on narcotic pain medication, and my mother had Alzheimer's disease and couldn't complete a sentence.
Oh,
so
my God.
When my dad died, we found these reverse mortgage papers. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. And so what was your experience before then? What were you working and doing something else? What were you doing in that moment?
Yes, I've been in the nonprofit world for many, many years. And at that time, I was working as executive director of a nonprofit called Women of Los Angeles and Women of D.C.
Mm-hmm. And so you discover this reverse mortgage. What did you think it was?
You know, the only thing I knew about it was that I saw the commercials on TV with James Garner and Robert Wagner talking about how great they were. That's all I knew. And from that, my parents called just to get information about it. I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
And a salesman came out to their home and took their loan application then and there in a very aggressive way.
And then, so how did this get cleaned up in your personal story? Like, what happened in the case of your parents? So your parents, let's back up a second. So a reverse mortgage is a product that is sold to people who are over the age of 62. And the promise is, hey, you've got all this equity in your house, right? And you want to get liquid. We'll show you how, right? Is that the basic premise?
Right. That's the basic premise with one other thing. You know, it's a way for you to stay in your home for life without making a house payment.
And so what happened in your parents' case?
In my parents' case, A, they didn't need a reverse mortgage. They had assets. They had a mortgage payment of $500 a month that they could afford, and it was just totally unneeded. So I don't know exactly what the salesman said to them, but he talked them into signing it. I think he pressured them into signing. And in their case, as soon as we found out, my sister and I found the documents when my dad died a month after signing them, and I tried to give them money back. They got $80,000 for their house worth $530,000.
What?
Mm-hmm. That had $400,000 equity in it.
How is that possible?
It's a one-time upfront payment, and it's based on an algorithm they use, the age of the youngest borrower, mm-hmm. the value of the property, and the current interest rate. So, you know, it's outrageous that was the amount of equity they got. That did us absolutely no good. It sat in the bank for months.
Oh, my gosh.
So I tried to give it back three times, and at that time I was very angry, and I didn't want to pay the $25,000 it cost them to get this loan.
Right.
So they refused every single time, and then I entered litigation with them, and they Financial Freedom hired million-dollar attorneys and blamed my sister and my whole family for being greedy, evil children.
What?
I mean, it sounds like a horror story.
It does. It's horrible.
And the jury bought it and, you know, said, in spite of my parents' health being testified to by their treating doctors, they hired an expert doctor who said my parents were sharp as tacks, who never even met them. And the jury bought it, and we lost.
But wait a minute. But you got busy after that, right?
I did. And honestly, as soon as I found the reverse mortgage documents, I'm the kind of person who wants to know exactly what happened. What was this? And I began researching, and I reached out to every single advocate and expert in the country, lawyers included, who knew anything about reverse mortgages. And I educated myself. And that's how I became, found my purpose in life, really.
And if I may, you also have a website, right?
Yes, I do. And I created that when I was very angry, too.
I know. I want you to say it because it's kind of the best website I could imagine for given your circumstances. So why don't you tell everybody the website?
It's elderfinancialterrorism.com.
There you go. Okay. By the way, so we're joined by Sandy Jolly. She's a reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert. You've done a lot of testifying before various regulators and speaking out against mergers of companies that have been selling these reverse mortgages. How did you get into that part of it?
That was sort of accidental, too. Some of the advocate groups that I met, you know, I became very close with, and we sort of formed a informal partnership, if you will. And one of them is California Reinvestment Coalition, and they have also filed Freedom of Information Acts to get information on other mortgages, but on reverse mortgages. So I became the de facto expert on the reverse mortgage part.
Well, that's good because you are our expert on the reverse mortgage part. And when we come back with Sandy Jolly, we are going to pick apart the reverse mortgage beyond the basics. And what we want to go through is this fabulous thing that you have on your website. And we'll put a link to your website from our show notes. It's elderfinancialterrorism.com because there's a very, if you're considering a reverse mortgage, you really need to know about this. You need to understand what some of the downsides are. And I'm wondering from Sandy's perspective whether there are any upsides. Maybe there are some people who need a reverse mortgage. They can be better. Have they gotten better? These are some of the questions that we are going to follow up with in our next segment with Sandy Jolly. It's such a nice name. It's such a jolly name. And yet she says elder financial terrorism. It seems like a little bit of a paradox, but I'm going to get through that during the break. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. We are joined by a special guest this hour. Her name is Sandy Jolly. She is a reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert. You know, it's amazing because I'm looking at your bio. It's just pretty tremendous to take a personal experience where basically it sounds like your parents were scammed by somebody, lose the case, but then go on to do so much good for everyone else. So Thanks to you, Sandy. I'm learning a lot. This is excellent.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so Sandy, is a reverse mortgage in essence a flawed product or sold to, in other words, like there are times where I say there's like very insurance, there are very expensive insurance policies, and there's like some fraction of the population that they should be sold to, but they're just oversold. So is a reverse mortgage a good idea but a bad execution?
It can be a good idea, and that's the key word, can. But the missing link in the origination of reverse mortgages is two things. One is suitability, and for the consumer, is this product right for you in the long term? Is this going to be beneficial to you in the long term or harmful?
Mm-hmm.
And that is missing completely from the process. The HUD counselor or the salesperson cannot give you financial or legal advice, and that's what you need.
And people don't know that. In other words, they think that somebody coming to, say, selling me a financial product has to put my best interest first, right?
Right. And that does not exist in this product.
Consequently,
it makes it a risky, very risky product, both for the consumer, the lender, and the FHA insurance fund. They're all at risk.
Do you think that, I mean, I know there were changes that took place where this really was a program that now that it is the HECM, HECM, right? And
yeah.
It's through HUD, and that people think that these are legitimate because of the HUD involvement. Is there some confusion there among consumers?
Absolutely. It is a federally insured program, and all the lenders advertise that it's federally insured, so it's safe. Well, au contraire, this product is HUD, first of all. It's a big bureaucracy. It has no structure or system in place to audit, regulate, or enforce any of these consumer protections. And there are very few of them that exist in this product. And that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah. It's funny. You'd think that there was like a great move, and then all of a sudden it actually just adds to the confusion. Can we go through and like break down how these work? So let's talk about this, the purpose. When did these things start, first of all?
I think they started in the late 90s initially. Mm-hmm. It's changed a lot since then.
And what was it? What was it created to do?
I believe it was created to help seniors stay in their homes for life, and give them a little extra income in most cases, or reduce their output of money by taking away the house payment.
And what do you think is the biggest misunderstood aspect of these mortgages?
I think the biggest misunderstood aspect is that all these commercials and even the lenders, they talk about features of the reverse mortgage, like it lets you stay in your home without making a house payment and all these kinds of things. But they don't talk about what's necessary to get one. Is it going to benefit you? For instance, I mean, this is a perfect example. When the borrower either dies or becomes unable to handle their financial affairs on their own, and the heirs need to step in and deal with it, they need to have legal authority to talk to the servicer. And that means they should be told that they need a trust from the beginning so that there's a trustee who can always talk to the servicer.
Can you do that with just a plain old power of attorney? In other words, if your mom is getting a reverse mortgage and you want to go talk, can you say, hey, I have power of attorney. Here's durable power of attorney. Can I do that then, or must it be a trust?
Yes, it can be a durable power of attorney while the consumer is living, while the borrower is living.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute that they lack capacity or that they have passed away, that power of attorney, of course, is invalid. So you have to have that legal authority in some way. And in states like California, where probate can cost 10% of the value of the property, and the property is the only asset, you don't want to have to go through probate to get legal authority.
So when you, so, okay, wait a second. The other part of this is there a lot, isn't there now an underwriting standard for this? Don't you have to go through some, a little bit of hoop jumping for these or not? Because I thought
you
there
do.
Was some extra, there were some extra things as of 2015 that had to happen or not.
Yes, there's called a financial assessment tool that they have to go through. So it's a little bit of a qualification. And for the most part, most lenders are pretty good at following the financial assessment. If a potential borrower does not pass the financial assessment, they absolutely should not try and find a way to get a reverse mortgage or go to somebody less reputable who's going to avoid the financial assessment, which some unethical lenders will do.
When you go through this, we have like the problem about the, you know, when you die, this has to get paid back. That's often sold to someone who's not, when it's not suitable. What about the cost of reverse mortgages? Has the cost come down at all? Because I remember years back, it was seemed to be a very expensive way. It's more than what, say, a lot of people will say, oh my gosh, you know, this is, you know, the interest is the, you know, way higher. I mean, you're going to pay more interest than you would for a 30-year, you know, conventional mortgage. But what does it cost to get one of these mortgages?
It still costs a lot of money. There's two things that cost a lot of money. One is you're paying for the mortgage insurance premium a fee up front, which can be $12,000, say. And then you pay monthly payments on the mortgage insurance premium. The cost of the loan, say in my parents' case, it was $25,000.
Okay.
So that's what you're paying compounded interest on from day one. That plus their $80,000. They paid compounded interest on that from day one, compounded daily or monthly, and it begins to really add up.
Which essentially means that depending on how long the borrower lives, the loan amount can actually be end up being greater than the house is worth, right?
Correct.
That's the part that I think people don't get.
Right.
Right? Because they say, oh, well, and also, you don't have to pay the loan back while you're living in the home, but when you die or you sell or you move out of the house, that's when it has to be, that's the trigger, right?
Right. Those are the triggers. There are actually 17 triggers. I think they're listed on my website.
Unbelievable.
And those triggers, you know, if you fail to pay your taxes and insurance, and, you know, the lenders like to say that's the consumer's fault, you know, they should have known. But if there had been a pre-planning, is this right for me over the long term, they would have seen if they could afford to pay their taxes and insurance over the long term. But when they're given a lump sum in the beginning with no financial plan whatsoever, then that's when this situation can arise.
And they're not certified financial planners who are doing this. They're mortgage brokers, generally speaking. We're on the line with Sandy Jolly. She is a reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert. When we come back, we're going to find out from Sandy who should consider a reverse mortgage and when does it make sense. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money, and if you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We are here with a guest, Sandy Jolly. She is a reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert. She basically went into this by accident because a terrible situation occurred for her parents who were sold a reverse mortgage, and it was, I don't know, it sounds like borderline fraudulent, but anyway, became an expert and testifies before federal regulators like the OCC and the Federal Reserve and HUD and CFPB. And Sandy, we've talked a lot about some of the downsides. Who should consider a reverse mortgage? When is it right?
It's right when the consumer understands, the potential borrower understands that they need to see if it's right for them in the long term. This is not a term product for a short-term use, period. So they need to do a little financial planning. And like I mentioned before, the HUD counselor and the salesperson cannot give financial legal advice. So it's really important to include your family or trusted advisors in this process to make sure it works for you over the long term. And I've recommended reverse mortgages to a number of people where we've worked out together that, yes, this is in their best interest in the long term.
But it
will provide some financial security for them.
It really is. It's education and it's understanding everything that's happening in various scenarios, right? Because, I mean, if you're single or widowed, this is one scenario. But if you're married, there's another scenario. If, you know, you want your kids to inherit your home, there's a third scenario. Like, there's a lot of different things to contemplate. And as you say, this is a much more complicated product than the Fonz is giving you when in that, you know, 30 or 60 second TV spot, right?
Right, absolutely. And that new commercial with Tom Selleck, you know, is pretty powerful. But the borrower, the potential borrower, needs to look at how does this, these things that he's talking about, these features, do they work for me?
What happens for most people when let's say the spouse passes on at that house? Do we have any statistics about how many or what percentage kind of go okay versus these really nasty circumstances that arise?
I don't have any statistics on that. And at the same time, you know, just consider this. So one spouse passes away, and that particular spouse managed the finances for their entire married life.
Mm-hmm.
So now the remaining spouse has no idea how to deal with anything, no idea how to pay taxes, or no idea how to manage the finances. He or she's going to be in a world of trouble if they don't get help. And a lot of seniors, and I put myself in that category too, you know, we've been making our own financial decisions all our life, and we're reluctant to include others, or if we get in trouble, to talk about it with other family members. And that's a key here. You must talk about it with trusted advisors or family members and not let it get to the point where it's going to be a problem and you could risk losing your home.
If someone's listening to this right now and has a reverse mortgage, what should they do to, like, maybe a few different things that you should know about your reverse mortgage? You did it already, so we can't undo it. What should we do?
You should make sure that first of all, your estate wishes are going to be carried out. And while you're living, that you have someone who can step in if something should happen to you, an accident or you lose capacity, that can act on your behalf and has the legal right to do so. So I say a trust, but it can be power of attorney while they're still living.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the keys in getting a reverse mortgage, your wishes for your estate. A lot of lenders have said it's about, you know, the heirs shouldn't inherit anything. This is a loan for seniors. Well, that's not the case. It's the senior has to say what their wishes are for their estate, and those have to be able to be carried out, and that's being prohibited a lot of times because they didn't prepare. They didn't know how to prepare.
If you see that your parents are maybe even thinking about it, let's say you're lucky enough that they talk to you. A lot of people here, you know, who are dealing with their you know, aging parents. What should we do as kids to maybe, because I think sometimes the parents don't want to hear it from us, but is it best to involve a third party in this at that point?
Yes, absolutely. Somebody else should be involved. This is a complex financial instrument that they're signing, binding legal documents. And as a regular consumer, most of us will not understand the terms. And that's what's missing, too. That's what's missing in suitability. The terms of this, we need to understand what those are.
Sandy Jolly, I cannot thank you enough for joining us. This has been so interesting. And we're going to link to Sandy's website, which is elderfinancialterrorism.com. And you're going to read all about this. It's really interesting. She's got a beautiful sort of beginning to end understanding reverse mortgages. And I love the first thing she says is the site is dedicated to the consumer. The purpose is to educate, explain your rights, protections in every step of a reverse mortgage from origination, servicing, default, repayment plans, maturity, and foreclosure. Sandy Jolly, reverse mortgage suitability and abuse expert, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today, Jill.
Take care. And if you've got questions about reverse mortgages, send them to us and we will absolutely send them on to Sandy because she obviously is the expert. This is kind of thorny here. You know, these products that are oversold, again, it's not the bad product. It's just selling it to the wrong people. That's what the problem. All right, it's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. And send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Do I invest here? Should I put my money there? Jill Schlesinger can help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. Hey, thanks again to Sandy Jolly for joining us. If you've got a question about perhaps a reverse mortgage, just shoot us a note because I think it would be really helpful so that we could, you know, forward it to Sandy. We could make this work for you. Just remember, there are very few consumer protection regulations that are available around the reverse mortgage market. So the problem is that the servicer and HUD, there are a lot more regulations, but there isn't a lot of regulatory oversight or auditing or enforcement. So I just want to remind you of that. So if you've got a reverse mortgage, if you're considering one, just let us know and we'll put you in touch with Sandy. That might be helpful for you. All right. Okay. So ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com, 855-411-JILL. I wrote an article, a Tribune article, about helping out with adult children. I think that this is something that we've talked about in the past, that we're very concerned when people are helping their kids so much that it's hurting their own retirement savings. So, and I'll, Mark, let's put a link to that in the show notes. I wonder if I actually, did I post it on the website or did I forget to? Maybe I forgot to. I'll put it on the website and then we'll do it. Anyway, according to the Census Bureau, about a third, 24 million 18 to 34-year-olds live in their parents' home. And one in four of them don't do anything. No school, no work. Anyway, and then we had a separate study that came out, which said half of Americans over 50 said they're willing to overextend themselves financially to give their children a more comfortable life. So that, I don't know, we just have to try to strike a bit of a balance here. So I got a couple of emails about that article, one from Ron, who was in Wisconsin, who said that One issue is that the statistic that often refers to the 18 to 34-year-old age group, he said this is usually a point of reference for the demographic, but he does point out that it's not the whole story, that maybe we should be drilling down and do something like 18 to 24 and then 24 to 34, something like that. It may be that we're skewing the numbers, so I think that makes some sense to me. So I don't know if we can get those numbers in a different way, but I'm going to think about that next time I write, because that would be very helpful to have that. And then Eva wrote in that there's a corollary to this issue, which is, should your nest egg be put at risk to help impoverished elderly parents? If not, what are the possible solutions? How does one achieve them? My mother is 93. She's in an assisted living facility. She is soon going to need skilled care. She's got 1 year of money left based on her current cash flow. We've looked at Medicaid and at subsidized religious institutions without much satisfaction. What to do? This is also hard. This is the quintessential sandwich generation problem where, you know, you may be helping your kids and your parents or one or the other. But I think that the problem that I see with this is, you know, you want to help out. I'm not sure, you know, I would hate for you to put your own retirement security at risk. On the other hand, we want you to help out your parents. So I think maybe some combination, if you can get together with your family and figure out what you can do, maybe what you do is you have her exhaust her resources, go on Medicaid, and then from there, see if you can augment that with some help. But I mean, you can only do what you can do. I think that that's one of the big issues that people are confronting. You can't make this into something that you can't magically find this money out of nowhere. So in my mind, you're going to have to sit down and get real with yourself, with your siblings, and think about what is best for the entire family. You can't have everybody going broke for one. And, you know, in some ways, with an elderly parent, at least you have the option of a social safety net, Medicaid. It may not be the most appealing option, but it's an option. And I guess otherwise, then you have to start thinking about, well, what are the alternatives? Do we have mom move in with one of us and then have somebody, you know, come into the house? I don't know. What I do know is that having a elderly parent who is in need of care can drain resources just as much as an adult child. And there really does have to, you have to be able to strike a healthy balance. I don't know what that is for you guys, but you're going to have to figure it out. Okay, you're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, money question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. You know, the great thing about doing this show is that I always learn something new. And we got this email from a guy, I don't even want to say his name, who writes, if a bank official was digging around in my background and credit history, and he discovered that I am secretly married by virtue of a California confidential marriage license, is he obligated to keep the secret? All right, now this got me thinking, what on earth is a confidential marriage license? So I go, you know, digging around a little bit because marriage and divorce records are usually public records, right? It's pretty easy. And even with California, you can go to the Office of Vital Records, which is a division of the California Department of Public Health, and find that out. However, there are some couples who want to keep their marriage or their divorce a secret. And I guess in California, especially all of those big celebs. Anyway, I think that California is the only state that allows couples to obtain what is called a confidential marriage license. That's just totally fascinating to me. So the question of whether if somebody were to find out that by accident that you are able to essentially get married in secret, does that person now have to hold that information? I would presume so, because I think that the banks are held to any privacy laws that exist. So I'm going to go with, I'm guessing yes, that if that's the case and someone finds out that you were married confidentially, then you're able to keep that secret, or they would keep that secret. Okay. We learned something new today. Thanks again for listening. 855-411-JILL is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Don't forget to check out our podcast, Better Off. Get it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcast. We will talk to you next week. Take care.